What's going on, everybody? Welcome to 2022. If you're listening to this episode when it comes out, it's the beginning of 2022. Hopefully this year is better than the last couple, even though for us it hasn't been too bad. It's been a weird couple of years, and it feels like those 2 years have been smashed together as one, but hopefully 2022 will be a lot better. Today's podcast, we are talking to Solar from My Pie Tiki Bar about running a pizzeria and a tiki bar at the same time. Interesting combination, but it was fun talking to Solar. Great episode. I think you're going to get a ton out of this one. And before we talk about this particular podcast with Solar, we redid our website, smartpizzamarketing.com. Go check it out. Also, if you're listening to this when it comes out, you just missed my free webinar on marketing ideas for 2022. I went in depth. You can go over to smartpizzamarketing.com/courses. And you can probably watch the replay, although I may just make the replay available to our mastermind group members. So I'm going to be doing these webinars maybe once, maybe twice, maybe three times a month where I teach a specific topic. You can join live for free, but the replay is going to be available for our mastermind group members, as well as the Pizza Summit is available for our mastermind group members and a courses. So you can buy our courses. I'm going to be doing courses on Instagram, TikTok, email marketing, Twitter, all of those platforms that you're looking to leverage, maybe one about NFTs and cryptocurrency for restaurants specifically. Those are all going to be available over at smartpizzamarketing.com/courses. Go check it out. We've archived all of our websites, really trying to organize the website over there because we have a ton of content that we've done in the past. And I'm just trying to make it organized so you can go check it out. If you're looking for a specific topic or you're looking for a specific interview that we've done, you can go over to the search feature, just type it out, and you can find it very, very simply, whether you're on mobile or you're on a desktop. You can also get our content ideas. There's a ton of information. But I really highly suggest you join our mastermind group. You get a couple of calls with us a month, part of our Facebook group. You're going to get my courses, all of the webinars, all included in the mastermind group. So if you're looking to leverage social media and really get in there marketing and try to find employees and all that good stuff, check out our mastermind group, smartpizzamarketing.com/mastermind, to check that out. And thank you so much to today's sponsors of the podcast right now. If you're looking for consistent quality and superior fresh tomato flavor, check out Stanislaus Food Products. Real Italian values guide this family-owned company. Values like work hard, never cut corners, always do your best, and keep your word. They know consistent flavor and quality is crucial to great food. That's why they work so hard to provide you with the freshest tomato flavor can after can. You can follow them on Instagram at Stanislaus Tomatoes for weekly business building ideas from other successful pizzerias. And I have to say, over the past few months, I've been using Stanislaus products in my pizzas that you see over on Instagram that I'm making at home. And I'm very happy with the results. I love this food product. And I'm very picky about who we suggest you use here on the podcast. So if you hear them on the podcast, you know I endorse them. I use them. I enjoy them. So if you're listening to this, go check them out on Instagram at Stanislaus Tomatoes. You will not regret it. If you're looking to market your pizzeria, you have to contact Mailshark. It's got to be your direct mail go-to company. Whether you want to get your menu in the hands of new customers or promote your pizza shop with a postcard, magnet, or one of the hottest direct mail pieces, they have these plastic postcards. Mailshark will work with you to come up with the best marketing plan that fits your budget, and that's very important. Mailshark gives pizzerias the ability to spread those mailings and payments out over a weekly schedule. So it doesn't have to be all upfront money. It helps you out, lets you work with them to put those content pieces out and pay for it as you go. Thousands of pizzerias trust Mailshark with their direct mail and printing marketing. They are the best in the industry. Give them a call today, 610-621-5116, or you can visit them at themailshark.com/SPM to find out how they can help your pizza shop. They have so many options available. Again, 610-621-5116 or themailshark.com/SPM. All right, let's get into today's podcast episode with Solar from My Pie Tiki Bar. You're really going to enjoy this one. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the podcast. Solar from My Pie Tiki Bar is joining me. We're going to talk pizza and all that fun stuff. So, Solar, thank you so much for joining me in the podcast. Very much appreciated.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
I follow you on Instagram, and you have this cool tiki theme going on, but your pizzas look phenomenal too. So, how did you get started in the pizza business?
how did I get started? I the idea of doing Detroit style pizza was in my head for a while.
Yeah.
As far as like where I first had it, like I tried it. I'm sure you know Descendant in
Yes.
Toronto.
Yeah.
So a buddy of mine actually painted their place.
Oh.
So like I don't know if you've seen pictures of like the inside of their restaurant, but it's got like a really cool paint job.
Yeah, I have to look it up again, but I do know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so my buddy Stu painted it, and I really went there to just check out his stuff, and I tried the pizza. I never had pizza like that before, and I was hooked. And yeah, just it's kind of like one of those things with me where like I want something and it's hard for me to get, so I'll learn how to do it myself.
Yep.
And that's how I started making Detroit pizzas. I had another couple of restaurants, and I was looking to do something else, and this space that we're in right now came up. It's really close to where I live, and I wanted to do something kind of like in the neighborhood. And it was big enough, I was like 50-50 between doing a pizza place and opening a tiki bar, and the space was big enough, and I walked in and just kind of looked at it, and I was like, we can do both in here.
Nice.
And yeah, it'll be awesome.
So, why a tiki bar?
I love it, man. It's like I went to my first tiki bar probably more than 10 years ago. We went to Frankie's Tiki Room in Las Vegas,
Yep.
and there's just like a feeling like when you step into it, it's like you're in a totally different world. There's always like the thing is like there's no windows in them. There's usually no TVs. It's just kind of like it's an escape, and it's like you're somewhere else.
And so, where are you located for everybody listening at home?
I'm in Hamilton, Ontario, in
Okay.
Canada.
So, when it comes to a tiki bar and pizza restaurant and kind of putting those two things together, was that something that people had to get used to?
I mean,
Although
sometimes
you're taking
people.
like two pretty amazing things, a tiki bar and pizza, and putting them together. So it's not like you're doing anything like out of the ordinary.
Yeah, I mean, it's like sometimes people are like, how did you come up with this? But I mean, it's a bar and our menu is pizza. So I don't know. It doesn't seem that odd.
And Detroit style pizza too. Detroit style pizza. Right now, Detroit style is my favorite style of pizza.
Oh yeah, definitely. There's definitely been a surge in the last few years, especially like over COVID.
Yes.
Like in Toronto, I've seen a lot of places open. Here, not so many. Like there were like a couple of places that started doing it, but yeah, in Toronto, like I think there's like at least a dozen new places that are doing Detroit
Really?
style. Yeah.
Are they doing it good though?
To be honest, I haven't really tried any of them.
Oh, because
I don't get out to Toronto that much, and like when I do, like I want to eat like new things and
right.
or like places that are like my favorites. So.
Right. Like there's a few, there's a few, I think there's in Boston area. I think I've talked about this in the podcast before. There's a few pizzerias that do Detroit style. I mean, more and more. It seems like there's one opening up all the time now. A couple are good. A couple aren't so good. But I don't know. I just feel like Detroit's, people think it's easy 'cause you just put the dough in a pan, but there's like a nuance to it that you got to like figure out in order to make a good Detroit style pizza.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like as far as our process, it took me about a year to decide on everything, like in a way that I was happy with, and in a way that would be able to be done at scale.
Yeah.
Because I actually like dialed back my process a bit because I got it to a point where I was like, this is awesome. But then like when I was looking at like, okay, like how's this gonna work when we're doing like 150 of these? Like it's not gonna work. It's gonna just be like too intensive and like just too dependent on having perfect timing for everything,
Yeah.
which it's not really feasible like in a production environment.
So you were making them at home at first?
Yeah, I was making them at home, and then when we got this space, I was making them here. Like especially like once we got our oven in,
Yeah.
like I started doing everything there and everything with our mixer because I wanted to use what we were going to be using, when we're actually open.
Yeah, it's hard, right? Because you have to have time to proof it, and you can't. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think you can just whip up Detroit style pizza doughs and get them ready to go and like for tonight. If you're not no, ready for
not
it, right?
at all.
You got to be way
and
ahead.
And I mean, yeah, like with our dough, we do a 48-hour cold ferment, and then you know, like it's we start panning them early in the morning, and then we give them a few hours to rise. We do a par bake,
yep.
So that we kind of lock it in like right where we want the crust, and that makes it easier as well and like more consistent when we're actually finishing the pizzas.
How long do the par bakes last for? Can you just use them today and tomorrow, or how long can you use them?
We only ever use them, like we use them the day of, and then we'll use them the next day.
Yeah.
That's as far as we'll ever go. But like when I was testing them, if I wrap them, you could go up to 3 days with like really not notice any difference.
Really?
Very little difference. We don't ever do it because we go through them all.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I don't think we would ever go beyond a day.
But if you did it at your house, you could probably use them all week, right?
Oh yeah, I think so.
Do you think you could freeze them? Have you ever tried to freeze them?
I don't know if we ever did. I think we might have, and it was like, I think you could tell.
Yeah.
So we just kind of gave that up. And like, I'm not going to get in like a blast chiller or anything.
Right.
So we do freeze our, like we do gluten-free crusts and we freeze those, and those come out fine.
If gluten-free dough has come a long way in the last few years, hasn't it?
Oh yeah. It's wild. Like people really dig our gluten-free crust. It took us a while. Like we tried a lot of different blends, and then finally we settled on, do you know Caputo's gluten-free flour?
Yes.
Yeah. We use that. And we put a lot of yeast into it.
Yep.
Because it's the only way you can, like, it doesn't really trap air, right?
Right, right.
So unless you have a lot of yeast when you're actually cooking, the only way you'll get it airy is if it's really active.
I remember people are probably sick of hearing this story because I've talked about it on the podcast so much, but I was a judge at the New Jersey Pizza Expo there. And I was the judge of the gluten-free category. This is probably like 3 years ago now, before Corona. And John from King Umberto's won. And his gluten-free dough pizza was amazing. That was the cusp for me. That was the cusp of people really learning and figuring out how to make a good gluten-free dough that doesn't, you can't tell it's gluten-free. Like 5 or 6 years ago, you'd get a gluten-free pizza and like, this is like terrible, but I'm gluten-free, so I got to eat this. But now it's like, the flour's come a long way where you can,
yeah,
it almost has a similar feel and texture to regular dough.
I knew that it was really good. So when we opened, I think, you know, Justin, from Cowabunga.
Yes.
Yeah. So he worked here for a bit when we were first opening, him and Andy.
Oh, nice.
And I think the first day we did the gluten-free dough, I gave him a piece and like, he didn't know that it was gluten-free.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, that's it.
That's when you know you did a good job of creating that pizza, is if someone doesn't know it's gluten-free. That's exactly what happened to us at the show. I was like, it was me, Alberto, and Justin from Romeo's Pizza in New York.
Okay.
And we were eating the pizza and John's came over and it was one of the last ones and we were eating it and we're like, this isn't gluten-free. Like, he's messing with us. This isn't gluten-free. And we're like, we brought somebody else over. We're like, try this. They're like, no, that's gluten-free. I'm like, wow, this is the winner, because this is the only pizza that's come through here that is gluten-free, that doesn't taste like it's gluten-free or feel like it's gluten-free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the thing that people really like about ours is that it's like, it's light and there's a lot of air in it, which I think that's usually what you're missing from like a gluten-free pizza crust.
How many of those do you sell a day? Like, is it popular?
We do probably at least like 5 to 7% of our sales are gluten-free.
Really?
I'd have to double check to be exactly sure. But yeah, like we do, from the beginning, we've had gluten-free and we've pushed that we have like vegan versions or vegetarian versions of almost all of our pizzas, as opposed to like having like, you know, this is our menu and here's like one vegan pizza we do. We just kind of came up with like substitutions for almost everything. The only one we don't do is, there's a pizza we do that's like stripes of pesto and vodka sauce. And that one, we just didn't want to do like a vegan version of each of those.
sauces.
Yeah, it was just kind of like a production limitation.
My daughter is, she's not gluten-free, but she's gluten intolerant. And like, she can't have a lot of it. And I always tell her, I'm like, wow, not that you're lucky because of that, because it's not something to be lucky for, but the options today are way better than, you know, 10 years ago. I'm like, you could actually eat a pizza that's, you know, gluten-free and it's actually good today.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's so many more options. And like, it's also like, I think so many restaurants are more aware of it.
Yes.
And they understand like what it means when like that order comes in.
It's true. Yeah. They know, like, it's kind of like what, you know, vegan's been around for a long time, but I think the vegan category in the last year or two is really growing and it's really becoming, items you see on the menu that are vegan. You see more vegan items on a menu than you did 5 years ago.
Oh, for sure.
You know, same and, kind of thing.
Yeah. Like even just things like, you know, like vegan cheese is come a long way.
Yeah. Totally. What was there vegan? I mean, there probably was, but like, I don't remember what vegan cheese was 10 years ago. Don't even talked about it really.
Yeah. I think there was for a while, but it was like really expensive. It just wasn't feasible. So one of the things we did early on is we actually got rid of our surcharge for like doing vegan substitutions.
Really?
We were fortunate. There's a grocery store near us named Coven.
Yeah.
And they've been very cool. They've helped us source a lot of products and also like get them in at prices where like we didn't have to charge more. Like, I think the vegan cheese is actually a little bit cheaper now.
Is it really? Oh, I mean, yeah, prices right now are crazy.
Yeah. We haven't got a jump in cheese prices yet, but apparently it's coming in January or February because we have like a dairy board here and they just set the price. And I think they've already approved a big jump.
Wow. So if they set the price, is it for the whole year?
I'm not sure. I think they change it yearly. I'm not 100% sure. But it sounds like I'm expecting it to go up like 8 to 12%.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
So what's your restaurant? Is it dine in? Is it delivery? What kind of style is it?
We built this place to be dine in.
Yep.
It's like the Tiki Bar. It's like the whole kind of experience. Like in our business plan, we were accounting for maybe doing 10% takeout. And we weren't going to do delivery at all.
Yeah.
And then, we opened January of 2020. Oh. So we had about 2.5 months. We really just got going because like all of January was pretty much like we were doing preview nights.
Family nights and all
that stuff. We were only open we were like doing two nights a week just to get things figured out. And then, by March, like we were really starting to roll. And then, we shut down. So indoor shut down here right away. And then we went to doing takeout and delivery. The first week, we just really kind of like, we just winged it. We had
like everybody, right?
Yeah, the week before, we were really only just starting to do takeout as well, just because people just kept calling and asking to order takeout. So we threw together an online ordering system. What was it called? It was like some free app. I think it was called maybe Gloria Food. It worked all right, but it didn't, like once we got to like using it for volume, it really had a lot of weaknesses.
Yeah, right.
And that's the first weekend. So the first weekend we were doing takeout on the Sunday, something happened in the app and it ended up canceling like 40 pre-orders.
Oof.
I came in, I was like, all right, like I'm going to go in early. I'm going to make sure that I like sort through all the orders and like get on top of it. And I came into that and it was like, I was kind of like freaking out a bit. I was talking to my wife and she came in and she helped me like call everyone and get them all sorted out. So like we got through it, but what we ended up doing is like we closed the next weekend and then everyone kind of came together and we figured out like a whole new takeout system and we've been using that ever since. And is actually so my buddy Peter, he started a company called it was called Curbside Pivot at the time.
Okay.
And the whole thing was like, I think he started it with the idea of, you know, like just helping restaurants do like curbside takeout.
Right.
And there, you know, like there was going to be like a stall that you would put outside your restaurant so people knew where to go and everything. And it ended up like really taking off for him. But so basically like, so from that weekend to I think maybe like the end of August, we only did takeout. And it ended up being exactly 500 days.
Wow.
Which was wild.
But your pizza, your pizza probably travels well, though. Like, I think Detroit-style pizza out of all pizzas probably travels the best and is easily reheated, don't you think?
Yeah, it definitely, it holds up. I would tell people, the best way to do this is to reheat it so that, even separate the slices and reheat it.
Yeah.
So that all of the edges get crispy. It's one of the better ones for this. If there's more mass, it holds its heat better. And yeah, it was good. And, you know, we had a lot of support doing takeout. And we did end up using delivery for a while, but we had partnered with a local delivery company. And rather than doing kind of like the whole percentage thing,
yeah,
they just had like a flat fee based off of distance. And then we... like on our end, we decided, this is kind of the most that we want to, you know, basically lose to a delivery order. And then we work backwards from there. So in our ordering system, we said delivery is only available on orders of $50 or more. And we figured it out so that at the most, it would take 10% of the order away from us.
Did it work out for you?
It worked great. It worked good. The delivery company ended up getting too busy, and eventually the quality dropped off as far as the service.
Yeah.
So we didn't end up not using them anymore, but it just kind of, it picked up just doing takeout.
That's so great. Better off, right?
Yeah. Like this whole time we've avoided using Uber or Skip the Dishes or any of those services.
That's great. I mean, you're lucky that you can do it without that. Now, are you back open regular or what's it like?
Yeah. So where we are, we reopened for indoor dining. I think it was towards the end of August. There were a couple of times in between then when we could have reopened inside, but, It was kind of sketchy. None of my staff were vaccinated. There was like a limitation of 10 people inside. So it just, and we were busy with takeout. So we were all more comfortable and we were fine just doing it, just sticking to takeout.
Does it still kind of feel weird now or what's it like?
It's pretty good now. When we first reopened, we were at, it wasn't 50% capacity, but it was capacity based off of how far your tables can go.
Yeah.
So I think we ended up with about half and we were filling it up. We were filling all of our available seats.
Right.
We were busy. We were still doing a lot of takeout. And now we're fully open again, full capacity. And it's been packed, especially the last month. We had some good media stories and it's really we're pretty much fully booked every night we're open.
Do you have a certain amount that you sell throughout the night and then once you're out, you're out?
Yeah. And it's just by, we do what we can do. And over the 2 years, we've more, we're doing more than double in terms of capacity from where we started.
Wow.
It's probably closer to triple actually. But right now where we are without making huge shifts to the way we staff and the way we do our morning prep and production.
Yeah.
We're pretty much at a cap.
Now, are you where you thought you were when you first opened the business?
It's hard to say because everything just went sideways, right?
True. So
kind of like all whatever I had expectations of just kind of went out the window.
It's almost like you started all over again, right?
Definitely, yeah. And like we're full every night, and we're still doing a lot of takeout to the point where like we've been just tuning how this works, but we have to limit the amount of takeout we can do, and we just do it based off of like at this time there's this many reservations, like we expect this many people to walk in, so to make sure that the kitchen doesn't get overwhelmed,
right?
Because I've been very conscious of like our staff's stress and everything through all of this, and I think it's easy to get caught up in like, you know, we're really popular, we're really busy, like let's just like sell as much as we possibly can, but like that takes a toll on people.
Definitely, yeah. For the long term, yeah, it's probably not good for your business. Well, I mean, listen, you got to sell as much as you can. Like you are doing, like within reason, right? Like as much as you can handle, not as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, for sure. And like every now and then we get, you know, especially the last month, we get people and like they'll call and be like, hey, like, you know, can I order a pizza and come pick it up in 20 minutes? And sometimes it's like, you know, like we've been sold out for like hours.
Wow.
And most people are like, cool, like they get it. Every now and then someone gets mad, but I mean, you know, I don't know what to do.
So you're building up like, like sometimes there's pizzerias like in New York that do that, right? Like they sell out.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to get there early.
Yeah. I don't think it's a bad thing. And it's not like a thing where it's like, you know, like we're only making like a handful of pizzas and then just walking away. Like we're going through a lot of pizza here.
Yeah. And you got to stick to your guns too, because you don't want to sell a crappy pizza just to get more pizza out the door.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's a long process. Like we got to prep the pans. We got to stretch the dough in them. We got to, you know, it takes time for the dough to relax so we can stretch it out properly. Then we par bake them. We got to let them cool. We got to repan them. And then, you know, we're getting everything ready. And then finally we're building them and getting them in the oven.
Yeah. Are you happy with the amount of pizzas you sell on a daily basis?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's great then, because you're not stressing out about like trying to sell as many as you can, and you sold out every day. I mean, that's great.
Yeah, it's been awesome. Like we've had really good support through this whole thing. I mean, it's like, yeah, you know, it's like it's up and down.
Yeah, totally.
Because that's just always how it's going to be. And like when we were doing takeout only in the summer, because we were renovating the other half of our space, so we didn't build a patio just because it was going to be too much to do all at once.
Yeah.
And, you know, like our numbers went down then because it's summer and it was a pandemic and everyone wanted to be outside. But, like, it was fine. We were fine. So we're still here.
I love it. Your Instagram looks pretty great, too.
Thanks.
Your pizza's on Instagram. Who comes up with, like, the pizza ideas, like the toppings and the creations?
That's mostly me.
Is it really? How do you do that? Yeah. You just experiment with stuff?
Yeah. Usually like I always have, kind of like a notebook or a text file going, and I'll just always kind of like be throwing together, ideas in there. Sometimes they make it off the page. Sometimes they don't, like a lot of them, I'll try them like as a staff meal or something.
And if it works, if they like it, you'll try it out.
Yeah, you know, like sometimes like we'll make one and it's like, all right, like that's it. That's the feature this week.
I share your Instagram page on here for a second?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
I gotta ask you about this one.
All right.
This Coney Island one. How was this one?
I really liked it. It did not do well.
Did it not sell well?
I believed in it. I think it like I don't think the chili was very visually appealing. But like the people who got it and like who knew what it was, they loved it. But yeah, like overall, like compared to some of our other features, like it wasn't a very successful one.
All right. So this pizza that we're talking about here is a Detroit style pizza. It has Coney dogs. It has chili, onions, mustard on top of the pizza.
Oh, yeah.
And you're saying I'd try it.
Yeah, for sure.
But you said it was good, right? You liked it?
Yeah, I loved it.
You think it just didn't sell because it's different?
No, I don't think. I mean, we do a lot of pizzas that are different.
Yeah, I'm looking at
It
your
just
pizzas.
didn't connect with people the way I thought it might.
Well, what's your most popular, not besides like cheese and pepperoni, like I mean like creative pizza, like what's your most popular one?
Our actually like our second most popular pizza started kind of as a joke.
Yeah.
We did it as like a one day feature, and we called it the secret pickle pizza. So like
Okay.
we just put it on our Instagram stories, and it blew up.
Really?
So it's just like we basically like cover the top of the pizza with we just do like kosher hamburger pickle slices, and then just crumbled bacon, throw it in the oven. When it comes out, we cover it with like roasted garlic mayo
Yep.
and then fresh dill, and people love it.
Wow.
Like it's surprisingly, yeah, it became like our second most popular pizza by sales.
So you're obviously not the guy who says you can't put pineapple on pizza.
No, which though, fun fact, we don't have a pizza with pineapple on it right now, which is, I don't know, like it's kind of weird because we're a tiki bar and we have pineapple here for drinks,
Right.
but we just don't have one on the menu at the moment. We did come up with one. We called it the 808, and we were doing it before, like when we first opened, and then as a feature. But it was like so we did like a banana leaf roasted Kahlua pork that we would pull and like put strips of that onto the pizza,
Yeah.
then like fresh pineapple chunks. We would like cut really thin strips of Spam and like
Yeah.
kind of pre-crisp them in the oven.
Yeah.
And then put that on like kind of like bacon strips, and then we did like a pineapple teriyaki sauce, and then a red sauce on it.
Wow. You know what? I'm gonna say this out loud and it's maybe a little controversial. But fried spam is actually pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know, like if I could ever show you, if I can walk around a bit. We actually have a Spam booth here.
Do you really?
Yeah,
Is it on
because
your Instagram at all?
there might be. I think there's a picture on there somewhere.
I'm gonna look it up, but I had fried spam at a like pan fried spam at a restaurant in Florida one time, and it was great. I loved it.
It's I mean it's like it's one of those things I think like you either grew up with it or you didn't.
Yeah. Well,
And
I didn't
like
grow
with
up with it. I thought
people,
it was great. I just thought it tasted like fried bologna. Well, maybe I did grow up with like kind of like that, you know?
it's delicious. I mean it's really like it's just it's a terrine,
Yeah, it was good. I liked it. So I'd try that pizza with spam on it. I'd try that, no problem at all.
Yeah, I think we've made probably like three different pizzas with Spam on them.
Do people in your area know what spam is? Like, is it something that they are familiar with or they've heard of it?
Like people that eat at places that like that eat at my places know
So you
what
have like a
spam is.
following of people that know what it is.
I think like everything I've ever done, I've always just incorporated spam into it at some point or another. So I'm just trying to spread the word.
Wow, there's another pizza that I'm looking at right here. It says pork shoulder, ham, Swiss cheese, pickles, and mustard.
Oh yeah, that was like a Cubano.
Yeah, was that one good?
Yeah, that one did pretty good.
Now, Detroit style pizza is probably great for experimenting like that. Do you think you could get away with that on like a New York style crust?
I mean, I don't see why not. I think like the thing I find with Detroit style pizza is because like, you have a lot of crust, you've got the cheese crown, and like typically you have a lot of cheese.
Yeah.
So like there's already a lot to go up against. So like when you're doing flavor combinations on it, like you really kind of have to go bold, otherwise it just gets lost.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of lends itself to like going out there and like trying things with it. It's not really like whereas like I think like like in New York or Neapolitan, they're much thinner.
Yeah, you can't put as much on there, it won't hold up good.
Like you can kind of get away with being like, this is like there's like two ingredients out here,
Yeah.
or it's like they're very like subtly flavored things, but I don't think that really holds up on a Detroit pie.
What's your favorite pizza, Detroit style, that you make?
Oh, my favorite. I think my favorite of all the ones we've done here is I think the Do You Wanna.
What's that one?
So it's a white pizza, And then we take Nduja sausage. We break it into just like little chunks and spread it over the top. And then we cook it. So like you get like all the, like, I don't know if you've had Nduja sausage before.
Yeah. Right?
So like, you know, when you cook it down, like you get that delicious kind of like chili oil.
Yes.
So that kind of covers the whole thing. And then we contrast that. So we do like dots of fig jam. And then ricotta cheese and then fresh basil.
Wow,
so you
good.
Get kind of like, you know, like spicy, sweet, creamy and fresh.
Huh. How often are you making up new pizzas?
It depends. Like sometimes we'll do a new feature every week. Sometimes we'll let one go for a month. It kind of, it just depends on, you know, like how the feature is doing. Or also, you know, like what else we're doing, like, or what I'm doing around the restaurant. Like if I'm busy, like renovating space or working on something, it's just like the creative side of my mind's not as right. engaged.
So you have like a set number of pies that you always have, and then you'll maybe have some specials in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually like we have like a pretty set menu, and then usually we always have like one feature, sometimes two. We try to keep it to one because the features typically end up being like heavy on like post-bake steps, and it'll just kind of like slow things down too much.
Is Instagram the number one channel where you get the word out about your new pizzas and stuff?
It's pretty much the only thing we do.
Wow.
We do have a Facebook page. It mainly gets used to just answer questions, but it pretty much just kind of mirrors our Instagram posts. I've looked at TikTok, but I'm still kind of trying to wrap my head around how to use it effectively before like I really get into anything with it.
Yeah.
And but mainly it's Instagram. Like you know, we built like a good following on Instagram.
Yeah, you have.
And yeah, like that's been where like all of our like word of mouth comes from. Like I can see it, like I'll look at like what kind of posts we do and, you know, like not so much like how much they get liked, but more like how much they get forwarded or like sent to people. And that, to me, that's like the main one you want to be looking at.
And if you put something on Instagram and it's only there and people order it, you know, it worked.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, like your secret pizza that you only put on Instagram stories. Like if people have seen that and they follow you, they're going to know about that. That's how you do it, right? You got to put things out there and let them know that, hey, once in a while, we're going to put things only on Instagram. So make sure you follow us. Otherwise, you'll miss it.
Yeah. So, yeah, like when we were building the place, we kept our Instagram kind of like mysterious. And like we were only putting up like these kind of like zoomed in black and white pictures of like the space and like what we were building.
Yeah.
And then like in the stories we would show, like in the stories on there and like in my personal stories, we would show us like, you know, like trying out pizzas or like doing a lot of the building. So like people were following along the whole time. So, you know, like, and we started that pretty early, like we started that months before we opened so that it wasn't, by the time we opened, like people knew we were going to open and they were waiting to like book seats rather than, you know, like just kind of opening and then being like, well, where is everyone?
Right. Cause it takes time, right? Like you did it smart. It takes time to build a following that cares about what you're doing on Instagram or any social platform. So you can't open and then start because then you're not going to see any of those results for 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, definitely. And like we have following from like the other places we had at the time. So it was just kind of like building on top of that.
Yeah.
So it's easier to build a following like when you already have some following, right?
I can see you getting better at Instagram too as you're going.
Yeah, we're figuring it out. Like, and it's the same thing with like the specials. Like sometimes I feel like I'll have a week or two where I'd like not feeling it.
Yeah.
And like I just kind of like I try to like really be consistent, but every now and then, you know, you just need a break.
That's true. That's 100% true. This is an amazing conversation. Thank you so much for joining me. Where can people go check you out if they want to follow you online or if they want to even come into your restaurant or pizzeria, wherever you are?
So on Instagram, it's MyPieTiki. If you just search for MyPie, it's MAIPAI. And we're in Hamilton, Ontario at 631 Barton Street East.
Go follow them on Instagram. I'll link it all up in the show notes, but definitely go follow them on Instagram. Salar, thank you so much for joining me in the podcast. It was very fun. Don't hang up, but it was very fun talking to you.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Thank you to Salar for joining me on the podcast. Again, head over to smartpizzamarketing.com. You can hit the search feature. You can look at the archived episodes. You can check out all of our courses, which you get if you're part of our mastermind group, the laboratory, we call it, where we meet a couple times every month, private Facebook group, all of our courses, everything that we produce, you get inside of that as well. And we're going to be doing a ton of that in 2022. That's my goal. Organize the website, get a ton of content out there and a ton of information on exactly how to do things. Because even though we've been doing this podcast for 5 years and I'm trying to teach everybody how to do it, I still see people not really understanding how to leverage these social platforms and really still asking questions. So I'd rather just get it all written down for you and you can go check it out there and we can be done with it. So let me know if you have any questions. You can reach out to me, bruce@smartpizzamarketing.com. You can also hit me up on Instagram @smartpizzamarketing. And don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're putting all of our content on YouTube as well. So if you're at home and you want to watch the podcast, go over there @smartpizzamarketing. Hit that subscribe button. Really helps out the podcast a ton. Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.